hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
This song is for all the people that's seen the fact that.
I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought a dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and, of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, big good news today from Germany. The elections for the German federal parliament were held today, and the current chancellor Angela Merkel suffered a stunning setback. Now she still remains the head of the party with the largest number of votes, but for the first time since the Second World War, a nationalist party has won seats in the federal parliament. And the AfD, or the Alternative for Germany, won about 13.5% of the vote and elected. And of course, these numbers could change slightly, one up, one down, 95 deputies to the national parliament. Now, this is a huge breakthrough, and party leader Frauke Petri said that Germans who have had no voice for many years will finally have a voice in the federal parliament. There will now be a chance to really debate immigration, debate the invasion that evil woman Merkel has allowed into the country. That's what's important. Now, you see, the problem is all the other existing parties essentially believe in immigration. The only argument would be how much. Merkel will say a million. The socialists will say, oh, even more. Anyway, it will now be good to have spirited and substantial opposition in the federal parliament. This is a repudiation, though not nearly as overwhelming as one might have hoped or liked, of the self-destructive refugee or immigration policies of Angela Merkel. And self-destructive is the only word for it. When you allow in hordes of people who are many of them utterly unassimilable from radically different or primitive cultures, but who breed like bunnies, basically, you're ensuring the long-term replacement of your own people. It's criminal. There's some interesting studies being done by what you might call a mainstream social commentator. It deals particularly with France, but the numbers would be applicable to Germany as well. The average birth rate the average birth rate in Germany is about 1.4 children per woman of childbearing age. What replacement requires 2.1. Muslims have a birth rate pushing 4. Now, even though they may start with a little bit further behind, I mean, obviously they're not anything more than a substantial minority of the population. With that birth rate, if nothing else changes, they will quickly, within about 40 years, overwhelm the indigenous population. This was based, actually this projection was based on France, where Muslims are about 10% of the population. And barring some change, there will be the majority in France in 30 or 40 years will be Muslims, most of them young. This is catastrophic demographic warfare on Germans, French, and white people in general. Anyway, I won't say this is the final victory, nothing like it, but the substantial victory today of the Alternative for Germany in Germany, winning about 13.5% of the vote, 95 or so seats in the federal parliament. This is huge. What do you think? No more Muslims is worth in terms of a jail sentence if scrawled, looks like magic marker on a park bench. Sorry, a bench where people are waiting for public transit. Well, 5 months. And this is absolutely horrific attack. And it's an attack primarily on freedom of speech. And it turns out by the ferocious sentence by a judge who would appear to be a Muslim. So did a Muslim judge decide to get a petty vandal who would criticize Muslims? Judge Ferhan Javad handed out a brutal Stalinist 5-month sentence to a man who had scrawled a few anti-Muslim messages with a magic marker at Durham Region bus stops. It's pretty serious stuff, right? Since when did petty graffiti merit 5 months in prison? Well, when the graffiti expresses politically incorrect thoughts or hurt the feelings of privileged minorities, and the judge made that clear. Joseph Porco has scrawled "No more Muslims" on several bus stops. And I am afraid I have just dropped the right item here. Joseph Porco, age 56, had scrawled "No more Muslims" on several bus stops around the region. Justice Ferhan Javad focused on Mr. Porco's opinions in handing down this brutal sentence. Mr. Porco's message left black marks on a public bench, but even after the words were scrubbed away, with a guilty plea, it leaves stains that may be more permanent. Mr. Porco's message was both hateful and hurtful to the community and needs to be deterred. See, it's the message. If he had written fuck off or some obscenity, probably no problem at all. He wouldn't even have been charged. The judge continued. Also factors is Porco's failure to recognize the true nature of his behavior, that is, he's a dissident, the judge said. Porco has apologized for, but seems to think his offense is limited to vandalism. What is plainly missing from the apology is any sign or any insight about his actions in choosing hateful words. What did he say? No more Muslims. And any semblance of what effect his words would have on the community, Justice Javed said. It does not matter that he wasn't charged with a specific hate crime, because this was a hate crime disguised as mischief. Oh, I see. So the judge has come to a conclusion about something that wasn't even charged. So Mr. Porco was unrepentant, and that required punishment. Furthermore, his words were hurtful. However, only certain people's hurt feelings merit court action. Many old-stock Canadians feel hurt when they see four turban-wearing Sikhs, less than 1% of the population, comprising 16% of the Trust Fund Kids federal cabinet. Many old-stock Canadians, or Québécois de souche, that's old-stock Quebecers in French, feel hurt at special privileges for Muslims with separate prayer rooms in supposedly secular institutions. So privileged minorities have some legally sanctioned right not to have hurt feelings, but the majority has no right to freedom of speech. This is the future of diverse anti-white Canada. Mr. Porco should never have pled guilty. One hopes that he will appeal his sentence. And here's what I dug up. So who is Justice Farhan Javed? News Ontario, an official outlet of the Attorney General's Department, reported on Javed's judicial employment. Justice Javed has been involved in continuing legal education programs for justices of the peace, was a member of the Area Committee of Legal Aid Ontario, and a consultant to Muslim Family and Child Services of Ontario, and a volunteer with Ontario Justice Education Network. He's fluent in French, Urdu, and Punjabi. That's a direct quote from this news release. And I add, and presumably English. One wonders why Mr. Porco's lawyer did not ask the judge to recuse himself for a reasonable apprehension of bias. And I think that's these are questions that I think that Mr. Porco is going to have to contend with, because it would seem to me, at the very least, that the lawyer should have objected that this judge has a reasonable apprehension of bias. I mean, yes, he's a Muslim, probably a proud Muslim, and in Muslim countries, if you criticize Islam, that's blasphemy. And in some countries, actually killed for this. I think it's a very serious point what was done to this poor guy. This is an interesting comment on the fact that many fans are rebelling against some of what's going on in the National Football
League. These are next week's tickets to the New York Giants football game. My name is Brendan Finn. I've been a Giants season ticket holder for many, many years. Been going since the early 80s. I can't go anymore. My apologies to the Mara family and to the Giants and all the respectful NFL players who still respect the flag in our country. But I just can't pay and I can't watch this happen. Happened to be wearing a shirt of a cop I worked with who passed away, was shot and killed during a robbery in the 6-9. I just happened to find the shirt. There are thousands of cops just like him who gave their lives for this country. And these people sit down and protest against cops. I'm burning my tickets.
company then goes ahead and burns the ticket. It's two tickets to the New York Giants game. On the Trump phenomenon this afternoon, sponsored by the American Freedom Party, James Kelso and George from Maryland and I talked at some length about the growing rebellion against radicals at among the usually blacks on the football and basketball teams who will refuse to stand for the national anthem. Now, of course, they're right, but the disrespect and the contempt for the values of many of their fans is something that has to be addressed. And we are discussing tonight on the Trump phenomenon the fact that this is not the football or basketball that people in their maybe 50s, 60s and up grew up with, where most of the players, not all, but most of them were white. In other words, looked like us. Now, especially in basketball, it often seems to be a game where one city's inordinately tall Negroes fight the other city's inordinately tall Negroes. It just isn't our game. And in addition to that, with the arrogance of some of these players who refuse to stand for the anthem, this is really to support that is to support values that are not ours. Now, how do you get team owners to turn around to make changes? Well, probably won't be easy, but here's an important thought along the way. If you stop watching the games on TV, let alone, I mean, going to them in person, but if you stop watching them, eventually the ratings come down. And if they're not drawing as big an audience, that means you can't charge as much for advertising. And professional sports is very little anymore about sports and is all about money. A team franchise, of course, sometimes they lose money, but can make an awful lot of money, primarily through the broadcast rights. And here's where where you actually have some power. The advertising is charged basically because of the audience. So you know, if a program draws a large audience, good. It can get higher, charge higher advertising rates. Conversely, if the ratings are falling, first of all, a lot of advertisers would not want to advertise in it's kind of a losing product. But if the audience, even if they do, they can command and demand and get a lower rate. So that bottom line is, it brings in less money, and that's what these franchises are all about. So what we can do as nationalists who don't want this anti-white stuff being pushed out at us, what we can do are several things. Number one, don't watch the game. I certainly don't pay money to go and watch it, but then don't watch it on television either, because then that counts you as part of the audience. And it's on that basis that the teams in the league are able to charge hefty advertising rates, and that's really what brings in the big revenue. It isn't even what it used to be. If you could fill the ballpark or the stadium. But much of the money these days comes actually from the advertising. So put it a different way, thinking out a strategy, what can we do rather than just be upset about it. Well, one thing we can do is refuse to participate. And this is, it's not just you and me and a couple of other people. There is a movement of a lot of angry people in the United States that look at these people and say, look, you're very, very well compensated for your physical talent. You are almost certain, if you don't ruin your life with drugs, to be a millionaire for life when your professional playing is over. The least you can do is not offend us with your, I suspect in many cases, only recently developed political opinions by refusing to stand for the national anthem, which is what some of these players have been doing in the United States. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's another, this is a rather frightening thing, and it comes from Carolyn Yeager down in Texas. She writes, she does podcasts, and so on. Beware the anti-Semitism laws to come. Former Belgian member of Parliament Laurent Louis has been sentenced to the humiliation of visiting 5 Holocaust memorial camps each year for 5 years, and writing a 50-line report about his feeling and keeping it posted on his Facebook page. Unbelievable. This is in a free, well, the West is not really free, but what happened to Laurent Louis can happen to you too if Jews get their anti-Semitism laws passed. According to European Jewish press, the former Belgian member of Parliament who was convicted for negationist comments and statements has been condemned to visit a number of concentration camps once a year for 5 years and write at least 50 lines on what he saw and what emotions he felt and keep it posted on his Facebook page. That's in lieu of a prison sentence. So basically, total humiliation. After 5 years of enforced indoctrination at Auschwitz, Birkenau, Majdanek, Treblinka, and Dachau, writing and giving a verbal review of it every time and seeing it posted publicly on your Jewish-owned Facebook page, which you will have to keep up, how well will you be able to hold to your freedom of thought? Won't it be easier to cave in and agree with their persecutors, writes Carolyn Yeager. And yes, I mean, this sort of humiliation has just that goal in mind. Negationists in France and Belgium refers to Holocaust skepticism. What statements and comments did Louis make? He's quoted as saying in 2013, Zionists financed Hitler and created the Second World War. That's what he said. I wouldn't agree with him, but okay. That's how Zionists have become the masters of the world. He's a friend of the comedian Dieudonné Mbala. In January 2014, in the Belgian Chamber of Representatives, he made the Quenel gesture, and that's the new, it's like you bring your right arm up from waist level and cross your heart with an open hand. Well, some people say, oh, he's new, yeah, see, it's not. But anyway, he did the Quenel in gesture and spoke of this Holocaust produced and financed, let's remember, by the founders of Zionism. Louis has denied that his views are anti-Semitic. But anyway, he's punished for them. Do you think that he got off easy? Then you're not thinking. This is forced brainwashing and indoctrination, plus humiliation. Worse than 6 months in prison. This is how you can expect to be treated when anti-Semitism becomes a crime in the Western Hemisphere, as well as in Europe. Americans will fear speaking out freely about their beliefs, as we've been able to do for so long. We will be under the thumb of Jewish rules and taboos far more than we have ever experienced. It will be horrible and humiliating, except for those who train their mind to accept that this is maybe the way for the near future. In essence, you will come to worship Jews while at the same time denying that you do so and believing you're following your own free will. This is what is in store for all of us if we keep giving in to demands, usually minority demands, to satisfy and protect their feelings. Remember, what we are dealing with here are speech crimes. Think hard about it. If you simply question the full credibility of the Holocaust narrative, you will legally be seen to be harming Jews, all Jews, but especially the shrinking number of Holocaust survivors and their descendants. That is the spoken reason. The unspoken reason is that you are questioning the credibility of the post-war political European and Anglo-American order, which is shakily built on the framework of the so-called Nazi Holocaust narrative, the narrative constructed at Nuremberg war crimes trials immediately after the war, and even determined to be a continuation of the war. This was going to be war by demoralization of the population through telling them that their civilization had done nothing but terrible things, and never reflecting on the greatness of our Western civilization, but also being able to make them feel particularly guilty for all of the problems of World War II. The judicial action against Louis was not surprisingly brought about by the Coordinating Committee of Jewish Organizations in Belgium, the CCJOB, along with UNIA, a globalist and anti-discrimination pro-refugee institute formed in February 2016 as an offshoot of the Center for Equal Opportunities and Opposition to Racism. The center has been mainly concerned with anti-Semitism and has been criticized for suppressing alternative political views. Interestingly, its 2005 financial report showed over two-thirds of its revenue out of over 6 million, I think this is euros, came from Belgian lottery sources. So, okay. If you look at the European Jewish press, you will see what all internet news pages will look like under anti-Semitism laws, given a certain length of time. Jews will not need to hide their power and dominance, writes Carolyn Yeager, because no one will be able to challenge it. Everything will be presented from the Jewish point of view. The most serious crimes will be anti-Semitism, racism, xenophobia, and Holocaust denial. And this is what Carolyn Yeager sees in the not-too-distant future. A decision was made on September 20th by German Chancellor Merkel's cabinet members, Thomas Mazier, he's the interior minister, and Sigmar Gabriel, he's the foreign minister, to accept for Germany a definition of anti-Semitism very similar to the one of the world Jewish community, the one it's pushing. The International Holocaust Remembrance Association, Remembrance Alliance, rather, was initiated in 1998 by former Swedish Prime Minister Göran Persson. He enlisted the efforts of Bill Clinton and Tony Blair to assemble an international body of 46 government heads of state. The Declaration on the Holocaust is the foundation of many other establishment enterprises now. And it's now in the process of getting all governments to adopt a working definition of anti-Semitism for enforcement purposes. The definition is meant to make it easier to identify and combat instances of anti-Semitism, meaning to arrest you and find you guilty of so-called hate crimes. This is a very scary write-up, but I've got to say, the predictions, I don't think, are alarmist. The trend in Europe has been to reduce and reduce free speech. England used to be a land of pretty much unfettered free speech. The idea of freedom of speech was very important to Englishmen and being jealously guarded and fought for. But then in the beginning of the 60s, under pressure from the Jewish lobby, Britain brought in the Race Relations Act, which allowed for persecution of people who expressed the wrong ideas on immigration too forcefully. And other restrictions have come about in more recent times. The threat to free thought, and you can't really have free thought if you don't have free speech, is immeasurable. Well, the Canadian Association for Free Expression is involved quite strongly in a ongoing quasi-legal action on behalf of Your War News. Now, Your War News is Canada's foremost anti-Zio-Marxist, anti-globalist publication. It's a tabloid, comes out of the East End of Toronto. And in 2016, after long, prolonged lobbying by anti-free speech forces, the minister in charge of the post office, then Judy Foote, imposed a mailing ban on the publisher and the editor of Your War News. And they are not allowed to send or receive any mail in Canada. And that's not just Your War News. That is them personally. And she has that power. And it's a power we are challenging on the constitutional basis. She's the minister in charge of the post office. She was then the minister of supplies and government services. But the post office came in under her purview. She had that power. Your World News and the notice informing Your World News of this indicated that she believed on reasonable grounds that Your World News was breaking two laws. That one was Section 319 of the Criminal Code, which is the so-called hate law, and the second was Section 390. Of the Criminal Code, which is defamatory libel. Now, this was in May of 2016. Your War News had not been charged under either of those provisions of the laws. It's now going on 17 months since that ban, since the minister wrote that letter. Your World News has never been charged under either of those laws in the time since. In other words, she had no reasonable grounds. Well, that's one of the battles we're in. We're trying to get that ruling reversed. But the editor of Your World News, he's still on on Facebook, and he has said that he's learned from a close source that Lisa Kinsella, who's the wife of Warren Kinsella, who was one of the prime movers of the measures to try to suppress Your War News, his wife is running in the area where Your War News is strongest. And editor James Sears today put out a tweet strongly suggesting that part of the reason behind the almost the fanatical persecution of Your War News, the reasonable position would simply be to say, look, I don't like its contents, but let it publish, and let the consumer decide. You know, if people don't want to support it and don't want to read it, they won't get advertising or subscriptions, or if when it's delivered to the door, and if one doesn't want it, what could one do? Well, I see. Oh, wait a sec. Yeah, just put it in the garbage, right? But no, the fanatics who are trying to shut Your War News down want it either banned as so-called hate propaganda, or fined or charged in some other way. their attitude to views they don't like is not, oh well, you know, they've got a right to them. They're wrong, but they've got a right to them. No, it's I don't like what you say, so you should not be allowed to say it. While that is a mindset, we now see kind of an additional reason for the efforts to shut down Your World News. If Lisa Kinsella, who has been repeatedly criticized in Your World News, if she runs, she may well, she would probably not like much criticism or ongoing critical examination of what she stands for. Well, if Your World News is around, there will be such scrutiny. So it would make perfect sense from their point of view to try to get rid of Your World News. And that's what we're suggesting, is at least part of the reason behind the efforts to persecute Your World News. And this also goes to the bad faith of the whole system. It isn't even an honest disagreement with their ideas, although that's no doubt there. It's being done to, this persecution is being done to try to shut down a critical voice should Lisa Kinsella run in next year's municipal elections for councillor for that area. Well, this is Paul Froman. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take a short musical interlude here, and this is Rebel Sun, and it's called Mr. Confederate Man. It's a really wholesome, nice little story. Mr.
Just a little boy in elementary school, English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants, and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, "Class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him?" Well, the school bell rang and I thought, as the bus carried me across town, I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man." The
next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man." Well, I was at home reading through the news just the other day when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw where she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile, I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man." I rose, "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man."
That's Mr. Confederate Man with Rebel Sun. I'll play one more tune by Rebel Sun, and this is called "The Greatest Place on Earth," and you probably have guessed that that means the greatest place on earth is Dixie.
I live in the land of cotton, I was born in Dixieland. Home of the loveliest ladies alive, by far the finest brand. And I love making dates in all 13 states, I love to treat myself. The satisfaction guaranteed, they sure do beat everything that's anywhere else. All the ladies look and feel so fine in the Florida sunshine, and that sweet young yellow rose of Texas always shows me a good time. And we sure had some fun celebrating Bull Run with some beautiful Virginia belles. And my heart's always in Dixie and Alabama, yes ma'am, them women love well. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And it's home sweet home to me, and all the women there look so great. And it's made me proud to wave my stars and bars ever since my birth. Yeah, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth. No, there's nothing like a sweet Georgia peach giving you a great big old kiss, or smooching on a sweet magnolia by the big river down in Ole Miss. And all the volunteers who volunteer in Tennessee always feel great. And in Missouri you'll never believe what they showed me in the Show Me State. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And it's home sweet home to me, and all the women there look so great. And it's made me proud to wave my stars and bars ever since my birth. Yeah, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth. Arkansas, you can have a ball in the land of opportunity, or hold a sweet pretty ass laying in the bluegrass out in Kentucky, or play with some pretty Louisiana boobies at Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And all the vaginas and the Carolinas are the best I've ever seen. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And I'm proud to be unreconstructed and with women who look so great. And that's why I fly my flag up high like I've done since my birth. Cause the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth. Yeah, without a doubt, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth, the greatest place on earth.
South is just the greatest place on earth. Great song there by Confederate Boy. Well, I'll take one, play one more song here for the short interlude here. And I think, who did you call darling to last night with Heather Miles?
Well, friend, you've got a pretty woman and you...
Okay, that's not the song I wanted, and that's not the artist I wanted either. Okay, who did you call darling to last night? Heather Miles, let's see if we can get it this time, and we can. Factory. And that's Heather Miles. Who did you call, darling, to last night? And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, our trust fund kid, that's our prime minister, was at the United Nations. He was in New York for a couple of days this past week. He spoke to the United Nations, and he also spoke at several other events, including a dinner Tuesday night sponsored by a internationalist group called the Atlantic Union. And this is aboard the decommissioned aircraft carrier U.S. Intrepid, moored at Pier 86 in the Hudson River. They have a big banquet hall there. And so as I'm reading of the European Union, the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council. And this is a group that promotes internationalism. Justin Trudeau, our trust fund kid prime minister, was given a Global Citizen Award. That's right, Global Citizen. He probably likes that. Probably that fits in right in because he says Canada is the first post-national state, and we don't have a political culture. I see. So we don't have anything. So I suppose, feeling no great loyalty to Canada, he would probably revel in this Global Citizen Award. But anyway, when you get an award, it's really, you're required to give a speech, in other words, sing for your supper. And what I found in his speech was extremely upsetting. And according to Terry Glavin of the National Post, more forcefully recalling the leading role Canada played in the 1980s struggle against apartheid in South Africa, that is undermining our fellow whites in South Africa. Okay. Trudeau said, quote, "We need to be every bit as strong, every bit as vigilant in opposing the scourges of," get this, "malaria, tuberculosis," "the scourges of racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, ethnic and religious bigotry, neo-fascism, neo-Nazism, and the violent extremism of Daesh, that is ISIS." Isn't it interesting? All these things we have to be, be every bit as vigilant and opposing all these things. Oh yes, and finally, Islamic terrorism. This is, of course, his fundamental objection to nationalistic, racially realistic, and pro-free speech ideas. He says we have to fight against the scourges of racism. Well, that's basically, get right down to it, it's pride in your own race and preference for your own race. Sorry, can't apologize for that. Sexism, well, means all sorts of things and nothing. In some cases, if you recognize that there are two different roles and capabilities of the sexes, you're a sexist. I think that's just a plain observation of human nature. Homophobia or transphobia. So these are things that the Prime Minister says we have to be vigilant about and fight against. Homophobia and transphobia. Well, why should we be compelled to accept, embrace, and love behaviors that many people consider either disgusting on a secular level or outright immoral on a religious level? Why must that? You see, what the Prime Minister is trying to do is criminalize opinion, and he ends up with, these are the scourges. Neo-fascism and neo-Nazism. You scramble around to think, find out, imagine, well, what's he even talking about? Where is the politics of Mussolini being revived? This is a neo-Nazism. Where were the National Socialists so organized, so powerful politically and financially, that they are about to take charge? nowhere. This is the bogey that doesn't exist. But nonetheless, this is what our trust fund kid prime minister would like us to fight against. And I guess the final thing in the litany was ethnic and religious bigotry. Well, what is bigotry? Supporting your own, favoring your own, is that what is meant? You know, these terms, these weaponized words like racism and so on, or ethnic bigotry, exist so that a wide range of opinion can be stopped because they're so vague. Ethnic or religious bigotry. Well, where does bigotry end, strong belief end, I think he has some problems with some members of his caucus because the trust fund kid is wildly pro-abortion, and even though there are a number of Catholics in his caucus, they're not allowed to promote their opposition to abortion. And I can just see him having in mind, well, this is an example of religious bigotry. You know, like if you stick to what you believe, you're a bigot. Well, this is Paul Froman. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow night, same time, midnight Eastern time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.